This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Betsy Grace. The so-called Disney family vanishes into thin air, and then LA law enforcement smells a stench at their luxury Disney condo. Tonight, a gun purchase and jailhouse letters. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
The Tote family, a seemingly loving family of five with their dog, celebrates the holidays and travels to their Florida home, unaware of what's to come.
Straight out to Crime Stories investigative reporter Sydney Sumner. They're called the Disney family, the Disney dad, the Disney mom, the Disney kids. Why? Is it because they live in celebration and they seem to have a fixation on Disney? They go all the time?
Yes, that is exactly why. This family moved from Connecticut to Celebration, Florida. And this is a Disney-planned neighborhood. They've divested a lot of their control in this planned neighborhood at this point, but it is an idyllic, perfect neighborhood that is overtly connected to Disney. And this family goes every chance they get to go into the parks for their children.
So they've gotten that moniker, Sydney, because they're Disney kids and they're Disney adults. You know, they have a name. The adults that keep going back to Disney over and over and over. They celebrate their birthdays there, their anniversaries. They get engaged there. The works. So this is the consummate Disney family. Okay. That's not the whole story. In fact, they love Disney so much, Sydney, they move from where to Celebration? It's in the shadow of Disney.
So they were originally based on the East Coast up in Connecticut. They had a physical therapy practice there. And in fact, the father actually travels back to Connecticut on a weekly basis to continue seeing his patients.
To Joseph Scott Morgan joining us, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, the author of Blood Beneath My Feet on Amazon, the star of a hit podcast, Body Bags with Joe Scott Morgan. Joe Scott, death investigator, it's very rare that an entire family just disappears.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And One of the shocking things that occurs is that you have this manifestation of what are referred to as family annihilators. And just imagine this, Nancy, just for an instant. You've got these precious lives here, four lives that just literally vaporize in just a moment. They had impacts on lives, as you can imagine, that extended far beyond just their familial group. And one moment they're there, you know, you talk about this environment of being around Disney and being engaged with that. The next moment, they're gone, completely gone. And when that happens, from an investigative standpoint, you have a lot of questions. Did they leave one by one? They go as a group? Have they just vanished into thin air and driven off somewhere? And unfortunately, many times when you have these cases, you wind up learning the worst news possible, and that is, They're all gone. They're all gone together in one house, though.
Tell me, Sydney, who is in the family? You heard Joe Scott mention four people. Who all is in the family?
Anthony and Megan Tote are the parents. And then we have Alexander, Tyler, and Zoe. Zoe is just 4 years old.
So you've got Alexander, who is 13, and he is a pianist and a violinist. You have Tyler, who is 11, who is a pianist and guitarist. And you have Zoe, who is just 4 years old. And, of course, there's Breezy the dog that we keep seeing. So 4, 11, and 13. Then you have mom and dad.
Both aspiring physical therapists, Anthony and Megan Tott meet in college, marrying shortly after graduation. The couple opens a practice together in Colchester, Connecticut. When the couple welcomes children, Alexander, Tyler, and Zoe, Megan stays home full-time to care for them. In 2019, the family moves to Florida, just miles away from Disney World. Anthony Tott continues working in Connecticut, traveling back to Orlando for family weekends.
Sydney Sumner, when did things begin to go wrong? And it all goes to their luxe lifestyle. They have a place, you said, in Connecticut. They have a place at Disney Celebration. They go to the Disney theme park all the time with their whole family, which is, you know, a couple of thousand of dollars once you take the whole family there. They had an exorbitant lifestyle. Where did it all start unraveling?
Absolutely. This family was living beyond their means at this point. I mean, that commute back and forth from Connecticut to Florida, even that would just add up, even if you're not flying, just in a car. So this family is relying solely on Anthony Tote's income from this physical therapy practice in Connecticut, for which they have to pay a lease. They're renting their home in Celebration with a hefty rent check every single month. Then he's traveling back and forth all of the time, and they're spending all of this money going to Disney World on a regular basis with their three children. So this really quickly adds up, and Tote is struggling to pay those bills. And at some point, he actually starts charging patients insurance for care they did not receive.
Between their expensive Disney-developed neighborhood, travel back and forth to Connecticut, and frequent Disney trips, Anthony Tott struggles to support his family in Florida. Tott loses his lease on the Connecticut Physical Therapy Office and is in default on several loans. Tott begins charging insurance for care patients did not receive. By December, the feds discover Tott's fraudulent activity. The father claims his family has no idea of his crimes, and he will cooperate fully to keep it that way. Tott stops communicating with authorities, and in January, they have a warrant for his arrest.
Joining us is renowned expert Karen Stark. She is a forensic psychologist, TV radio trauma expert, consultant, and you can find her at KarenStark.com. Karen, thank you for being with us. How does that happen? You know, just you know it's happening. You see your credit card bills. You know you can't pay them. You start paying just the interest on the credit card bills, and pretty soon you're 50, 60, 80 grand in, and you're drowning. But yet you keep doing the same old thing. Nothing changes. Isn't that what the definition of insanity is? You keep doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different outcome?
That's the definition of being neurotic, and exactly right, Nancy. In this case, he's really acting, and it's denial again. He's acting like nothing is going on. He's in over his head, and he doesn't want the family to know. It's humiliating. This happens a lot with family annihilators. And so he just keeps pretending that everything's okay until the point where it's all going to go crashing down.
Can I ask you about the wife? Because she has the same education that he does. She's very smart, very accomplished. She is a musician as well. She's an amazing mom. When do you begin to see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil? When do you have no idea what's going on in the family pocketbook?
Well, you wonder about that, Nancy, because did she really have no idea? How could that be? I mean, she's living there. She has no access to financial records. She doesn't begin to see that something is going wrong. It's a possibility, but it seems a little unlikely. Maybe she just went along because it was easier to do that, and everybody magically hoped it would resolve itself. But something maybe deep inside of her knew that things were not right. I suspect that very strongly.
Well, you know, Karen Stark, you're the psychologist. I get alcohol addiction, drug addiction, because it's a physical, it's an illness. And I've seen people's lives ruined, completely ruined. They lose their job, their spouse, their children, their home, everything, their credentials, because they're addicted to drugs or alcohol. But I don't get the being addicted to spending money, just way out of your league, that desire to spend money. I know a lawyer, a female lawyer, and she is fantastic as a lawyer. If you open any closet in her home, stuff just falls out that she orders online. It's constant. The shopping network, Amazon, you name it. And a lot of the packages have never even been opened. She's addicted to it. The whole basement literally is floor to ceiling. Like there's a little path amongst shelves, floor to ceiling of stuff. Then we hear about people that have gambling addictions. They can't stop. It's not physical. It's mental. Porn addictions, sex addictions. And it goes on and on. I get the drugs and alcohol, but the spending money addiction, I don't get that. When you know that you owe 80 grand for Pete's sake. I mean, I was looking the other day at an article about Tori Spelling, who I happen to like very much, and reading all the money they owe, it's staggering. How do you get to that point? And then you start feeling hopeless. Like, I'm never going to pay it off. I'm never going to get out of this hole. Hey, let's turn on the shopping network. How does it happen?
It's like any other addiction, Nancy. It really is not different from alcohol or drugs. It's really a coping mechanism. It's a way to not deal with your own issues. It's not something you consciously are doing. They're actually shopping to take their mind off of what's really happening without knowing why they have this addiction. So, of course, there would be clothes that have tags on
them.
Can't
you control your urges? Like, okay, if you have to shop online, if you have to do it, why can't you go to Temu? I mean, why do you have to spend all that money on, say, a Burberry shirt when you can get an $8 shirt? I mean, there's something to it. Why do you have to go to Disney? Why and spend $2,000? Why can't you go around the corner, have a family walk, and go to Chipotle? What's wrong with that? Don't you achieve the same? Don't you gratify the same urge?
That's what it's about. It's about gratification, and part of it, of course, is look at this wonderful lifestyle I'm living. But when you're talking about an addiction, it doesn't surprise me that your friend has tags on, because it's not about the clothes. It's not about what you have.
Please put her up.
It's this urge that you can't stop. You have to keep going.
I mean, when I see people driving by in a Porsche, I'm like, mm-mm. There goes that car payment. You can have it. Don't want it. I'll stick with my beat up minivan. So I'm trying to figure out what drove them. What demons were driving them to spend all this money? But in her defense, Sydney Sumner, Crime Stories investigative reporter, isn't it true that she had an ailment?
That's correct. Megan suffered from Lyme disease, and that includes often debilitating symptoms, including severe fatigue, cognitive impairments, like having a brain fog, issues with memory, joint pain, arthritis, not being able to sleep through the night, nerve pain, sometimes heart issues and dizziness. So we don't know exactly how severe Megan's symptoms were, but if this is something that she was dealing with on a daily basis, I could see how she wouldn't be so concerned with exactly what is coming in and out of a bank account every day, every month.
And put it all together, and you've got a roiling, bubbling witch's brew waiting to boil over, and it does.
Tony, you coming downstairs?
I think so. Tony, you upstairs?
Hey, come downstairs, bud.
No.
All right. Yeah, take your time.
Hey,
just stay calm.
All right.
I
got you.
Any children here?
I can't remember if they went to a sit-down last night.
Keep coming down.
Oh, she's
on the way. Yeah, like 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
Are you good? You got any weapons on you? What's your wife's name?
Megan.
Has anyone heard her talk?
No.
Meg isn't here either.
Meg?
All right, come on down, buddy.
That silence when they call out for Megan, that silence is deafening. To Joe Scott Morgan, you see that they are in the home and they've got their weapons drawn, probably because they can smell a stench from outside that luxury condo. It ain't cheap living in Celebration, right? You ever been down there? I have.
Yes, I have.
Have you?
Yes.
I mean, we've taken the children to Disney, the whole shebang, Disney, yeah. Florida, Disney, California, when we were living out there, the Disney cruises, they're not cheap. They're awesome. It's all incredible. But we would ask the children the next year, do you want to go to Disney? And go, please say no, please say no. They'd say yes. I have scrapbooks upon scrapbooks upon scrapbooks because it's a magnet for children. It's amazing. And those condos that are in the shadow, literally a stone's throw from Disney, they're amazing. And they come with a hefty price tag. So the stench drew the police into that luxury condo. Why? Why the stench?
Well, I'm going to tell you. You remember what we were talking about just a second ago? Where'd they go? What happened to them? Nancy, it had been weeks since this family had been seen. And just imagine when these police officers made this entry into this environment, it was like they got punched in the gut with the smell. And the guy coming down the staircase, hold on here, he'd been living in this environment for this protracted time. And that stench originates from one source. Well, actually, four. Or maybe five, if you include the family pet, it comes from death. And death has a smell all of its own. It inhabits that space. Did you know that when those police officers probably left that location after they began to explore the scene, Nancy, they would have had to have had all of their clothing laundered sufficiently because it would attach it to themselves. That smell would. It'd be in their hair, any kind of facial hair. And I know this is really grotesque, but that's the reality of what we encounter. Now you do this times four individuals who are now deceased in this location. This individual that's coming down the staircase had indwelled this space. He didn't go outside for fresh air. He lived in this space. You have, and I'll say it plainly, you have decaying remains that he is living adjacent to. Living is kind of an overstatement, existing in this environment, and it's a complete horror show.
Back to the body cam video that we have obtained. This is what happens when law enforcement smell this horrific smell from outside their Lux condo. The family hasn't been seen. Officers are responding to a wellness check from relatives, and this is what's going on inside.
Just have a seat. You good? I got you. Just have a seat.
Megan!
It's forward for me, all right? Keep your hands forward.
All right. Megan?
You want me to get a chair for you to sit down in? What's that?
Hey, can you go out there and grab some gloves?
We got it. We still can't find a daughter.
What?
Where's Zoe?
I haven't seen her. She went with you. Wait, no, I didn't see her. I was sleeping. She was in here.
After arriving at their vacation home in Celebration, Florida, the family goes silent. When police execute a search warrant, they enter the house and discover four mummified bodies and the body of the family dog inside the master bedroom.
Have a seat. You good? I got you. So have a seat.
Megan!
It's forward for me, all right? Keep your hands forward. All
right. Megan?
You want me to get a chair for you to sit down in? What's that?
Hey, can you go out there and grab some gloves?
We got it.
We still can't find a daughter.
What?
Where's Zoe?
I haven't seen her. She went with you. Wait, no, I didn't see her. I was sleeping. She was in here. I You think I'll have to check the garage?
You haven't seen her? Yes, you've seen her. Did he actually just say, Sydney Sumner, I haven't seen her, she went with you, and he's talking to the female officer?
Right. At this point, Anthony Tote is mumbling. He's giving gibberish answers. He seems to have some mental confusion going on talking to these officers. But he suggests that...
Whoa. Mental confusion? Objection! My rear end, mental confusion. He doesn't want them to know where Zoe, age 4, is. He knows darn well where Zoe is. Listen.
Investigators find Alexander and Tyler on a mattress in the Tots' bedroom next to the bed where Megan is covered with a blanket. Officers search the whole house for Zoe before realizing her badly decomposed body is under a blanket at her mom's feet. The bodies were black as leather, and an autopsy could not determine exactly how the victims died. All of the victims were drugged with Benadryl and had stab wounds. The children's wounds were inflicted post-mortem, and the medical examiner says they were likely suffocated.
We listed out all the human victims. The dog was killed, too.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Sydney Sumner, did you actually say that the dad had apparently mental confusion? That is not a legitimate mental diagnosis, Sydney, number one. Did you ever think he didn't want to admit that he killed his 4-year-old little girl who had turned black as leather, according to the autopsy, upstairs? Hidden under a bunch of blankets? Mental confusion? What?
Well, of course, Tote is also trying to conceal what he did. But watching this body cam, Nancy, this man, I mean, it's almost a month after authorities say that he killed his entire family. And in his interrogation, Tote goes on to say he's been trying to kill himself this entire time, trying, again, another word we love to see referring to suicide. But this man has been living in a home with 5 dead bodies for a month. And when police burst into this home, their concern was for his health. Tote briefly came out of the home and officers were poised to pounce on him for that fraud activity involving the insurance fraud back in Connecticut. So that's where they were going to make this arrest.
So, Sydney Sumner, isn't it true that he told officers, this is a yes, no, Sydney, that he tried to kill himself?
Yes.
Isn't it amazing, Joe Scott Morgan, that he managed to kill his entire family, but not himself?
Yeah, just didn't have the intestinal fortitude, did he? He thought about it all that time. And let me give you another little slice of reality here. While he was in this house, he literally, Nancy, it's not just the smell. And listen, I'm not trying to disgust anybody here, but this is the reality of what we're dealing with here. This guy is indwelling this environment, not just with the smell, not just with these precious family members that are literally decomposing all around him day after day. The flies are lighting on him. They're coming off the body. They're coming off the dog's carcass. They're lighting on him. He is completely infested in this environment, as were the police officers that walked in. They saw the horror of what was going on. I think the big question here is, how did he get them to the spot? We've heard a lot about, you know, the stab wounds and everything. Those, you know, those obviously are probably post-mortem. There are actually 2 knives that are involved in this. You see one here, which is absolutely horrific. The clothing is just despicable. When you see this, a lot of this is as a result of decompositional change. And this is what all that remains of the family. You talk about the body changes, that kind of dark, leathery-like. That's mummification, kind of a natural mummification that takes in. And, you know, the thing about it, Nancy, is that this guy, by trade, I know he's a physical therapist, but at the baseline, he's a scientist. he understands a lot about human anatomy, physiology. He also understands what it's going to take to kill somebody. And he took a cowardly way out. When I think about the level, the degree that he went to, he gave these people Benadryl, which is diphenhydramine, to try to OD them on. And you can OD on Benadryl, but I think it was purposed in this case to make them drowsy enough so that he could probably either with his hands or with a pillow suffocate them. And it's not enough just to do that, because after they're deceased, he's going to pick up a sharp instrument and drive it through their bodies over and over and over and over again. You know, it goes back to a statement I make, Nancy, the house of depravity has no freaking basement in it. It is absolutely horrific. I've covered this case for a couple of years now, and it is just absolutely bone chilling.
January 13th, investigators stake out the Tots' seemingly vacant Florida home. Mail is piled up on the porch, and an eviction notice is taped to the door. The feds are leaving when Tot walks outside, stumbling and convulsing. They miss their chance to arrest Tot before he returns inside, but worried about his health, officers push open the front door to a horrible stench. Tot tells officers his wife is sleeping and he doesn't know where the children are. Investigators find Megan, Alexander, Tyler, Zoe, and the family dog badly decomposing in the Tot's bedroom.
Anthony Tote lives in the home for weeks alongside the decomposing bodies, sleeping beside his dead wife while their children lie on mattresses near her, sending deceptive texts to keep the family members from growing suspicious.
December 14th, the Tott family heads to the boys' school for an annual Christmas concert. Alexander, now 13, is an accomplished pianist and a budding violinist. Tyler, 11, also plays the piano and is taking folk guitar lessons with his mom. Both boys receive awards for their performances, photographed beaming with their music instructor. That picture, the last taken of the boys, the family never seen alive again.
After the boys' concerts that night, again, never seen alive afterwards. And we heard Sidney Sumner state that the dad, the Disney dad, was having some type of a mental problem, mental confusion. Well, you know what? He knew enough to call the drugs a Benadryl pudding pie that he gave his children. Not only that, he had the wherewithal to blame who else? His wife.
Tot claims his wife actually killed the children while he was away and killed herself in front of him after confessing what she had done.
She said the kids were dead. And Zoe was my little angel. That's the first one I went to. I was covering for my wife. Obviously, unsuccessfully, because as you saw by the video, compared to what they said, I had no clue had my kids died.
That from our friends at WKMG. Joining me right now is a very special guest who has intimate knowledge into the thinking of the so-called Disney dad family annihilator. It's Sherilyn Cadle. She's the author of Suffer the Little Children into the Hands of Evil. She's the author of The Murders of Christopher Watts. She's the author of The Many Faces of Christopher Watts, 5-Year Update. And you can find her at SherilynCadle.com. Sherilyn, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Nancy.
He has the wherewithal to blame his wife for the murders. Surprised?
Not surprised at all. Yeah. As you see on the stand, he's very arrogant, very narcissistic. And he never... To this day, he will not say that it was his fault. He continues to blame his wife, Megan, who I think, by all accounts, was a wonderful mother, loved her children, would have been in horror to know what has happened here. It's just the kind of story that you want to go shower when you're done reading it or listening to it. It's really...
You know, he is not the first family annihilator to wipe out the whole family, including his wife, and then when she cannot defend herself, blame the wife. I guess we all know this story backwards and forwards. Chris Watts, listen to him lying through his teeth. Joseph Morgan, I don't get it. He murders the whole family. He takes them all out. But that's not enough. He then has to denigrate the mother, his wife, and blame it all on her. Nobody believes that.
No, they don't. This guy, you know, look, what a scumbag he is. And you and I have covered this case for a long, long time as well. When I think about what was done to Shanann and those precious angels, and let's don't forget the baby that turned out to be a coffin birth as well. All right. We cannot forget him. And when he did this to her remains, it goes to show you how disrespecting this individual was relative to this precious family that he did, in fact, annihilate, Nancy.
So let me ask Sherilyn Cadle. In this case, the current case, the case in chief, the Disney family, there was also discussion that they feared, as a family, the apocalypse. So they decided to all die together rather than endure the apocalypse. Is that right?
Well, again, this is his story. Megan's not here to defend that story. But yes, supposedly she had belief that on December 28th of 2019 that the world was going to end. The only thing to substantiate that is she had told his Anthony's sister that story on the phone one day, but I think more as a joke than believing it, and certainly not. We've all heard those kind of stories. We don't kill our families because we think it's going to happen. If we trust in God and believe that he is in heaven and controls us in that way to help us after eternity, we know that we could be together in heaven anyway, so we don't have to all kill our whole family to be together. So I think it's
well, you're so right, Sherilyn Cadle. And let me stress that the sister to whom you are referring is the defendant, the family annihilator's sister, who has stated the family was living in fear of the apocalypse. Well, we've got that call. Listen.
Hi. I don't know who I need to speak with. I'm curious if I can have a wellness check done. What's the address for the wellness check? It's 202 Reserve Place in Celebration. I had actually called on December 29th, and I had an officer go out because I was concerned. My brother and his family, they had all been sick, but there's actually been more development. Just in conversations with my sister, you know, my sister-in-law was making a comment about, and we just kind of put it all together, about basically the world ending on the 28th, and nobody has talked to them. Nobody physically talked to my sister-in-law since the 26th of December, and my brother has stopped texting as of Monday.
So you hear the sister saying, we pieced it all together. In other words, my brother fed me this story, and he runs with it. Listen.
We started fighting more about the world just coming to the end, the apocalyptic end, and that a family is really separated and enslaved, and to better to avoid this, to all go together. Okay.
You mean die together?
Die together, that's correct.
Okay.
Okay. So, because my wife's been chronically ill for a while, this really appealed to her, and because it appealed to me also, because she wouldn't be in any pain, family wouldn't be separated. Mm-hmm. There would be no more sorrow, no more heartbreaking, no more anything. It would be a salvation and everlasting life.
Karen Stark, a psychologist, this sounds like they're picking out a new car. Yeah, she had been ill for a while, so this option really appealed to her. I want the electric windows. I want the leather seats. She loved it. This is all BS. That mother did not kill her own children to avoid some zany apocalypse. What is he saying? And I love the detectives. They're sitting there going, yeah, the apocalypse. Keep talking. How is he justifying this?
Well, what's interesting, Nancy, is that he is justifying it, that he's saying, here's this guy that seemed like he was mentally incompetent, confused, and now there's a story that he did nothing, and it's always
Put her up. What have you been? He doesn't seem incompetent. To Sherilyn Cater.
Not at all. That's the point.
At no point does this guy seem incompetent. He's lying. There's a big difference. In fact, didn't he just file a nearly $10 million lawsuit against the jail claiming they're reading my letters and they're giving them to the media? He knows exactly what he's doing, Sherilyn.
Absolutely he does. I believe he does. He wrote this 31-page letter to his father, and it's just over and over and over again praising himself and having to confess this horrible thing that his wife did. And again, that he had no part in it. He walked in after it was all done. And he lay with his family for a month while they rot around him. And to me, I'm not a doctor or a psychologist, but to me, the mental state he was in is because he was laying there breathing the disgusting rotting of bodies.
His letter, the 31-page letter, practically
yes.
Every sentence starts with me, I. It's all about me and I. Karen Stark, I don't know if you're drinking the same Kool-Aid as Sidney Sumner, but he is not mentally confused. He does not have a mental defect. He murdered his whole family and then stayed in the house with them because he didn't know what to do with their decomposing bodies.
That was the point I was trying to make, that he may have appeared to be confused, but obviously he knows exactly what he's doing. Over and over again, he takes the blame away from himself. Even with this lawsuit, it's like, oh, the government is the problem, and poor me. It's always poor him. My wife did it. The government is hurting me. He cannot take responsibility. And he clearly knows what he's doing. Right from the start, he knew what he was doing. Did he have to go back and use a knife after they were all dead? No. That's rage. That's pure rage. We know that. So this guy is very crafty and will continue to take the blame away from himself.
She said the kids were dead. And Zoe was my little angel. That's the first one I went to. I was covering for my wife. Obviously, unsuccessfully, because as you saw by the video, compared to what they said, I had no clue had my kids died.
Crazy, crazy like a fox. That from our friends, WKMG.
So we were coming up with different things of how we could do this. We didn't know how we could do this because we're not violent people. Okay, not violent people at all. So could they have some cough medicine that I put them to sleep, take an overdose of cough medicine, just put them to sleep? And a nice peaceful death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my wife made a pudding pie, jello pie, froze it, nothing happened.
Sherilyn Cadle, help me. You're the one that wrote the book. You're the one that has conversed with this guy. You know all about him. What is his deal? Who is this guy? Pudding pie? It was chocked full of Benadryl to drug the children.
Correct. He made the pie, obviously. And I do believe, you know, thinking that he was surprising his family with dessert and to kind of force them to eat most of it. I think when the police got there, I believe that some of that dessert was still sitting around the kitchen. But yeah, who does that? I mean, it's so sad that those poor children were eating a pudding pie that he made to kill them, and all the while conversing and laughing with their dad and not realizing what he was doing to them. It's just, it's beyond sad and it's beyond evil. And he knew exactly what he was doing. He planned it. It was all very carefully planned. They had two places there in Celebration. They had a condo that they were buying, and then they had a house next block over that they were renting for $5,000 a month. And this was a huge house, beautiful home, had an apartment above the garage, I believe, where he could go. And yeah, that might be that's the condo that they owned. They rented a house.
Hey, you kind of trailed off there at the end, Cheryl and Cadle. You said he had an apartment over the home where he could go and what? What? I would be very concerned if my husband has a secret lair. What is he doing in his man cave? I take it he's not just in there watching football on Sundays.
Well, according to him, there would be times that Megan couldn't get comfortable and she was in so much pain, and he would leave and go and sleep somewhere else because she was just in too much pain to have him in bed with her. I mean, I don't doubt that maybe she had Lyme's disease and had some problems with
that. Who told you that, Sherilyn? Who told you that, him?
I was told that by a close friend of hers, that she was diagnosed with Lyme's disease when she was in, I think, junior high school.
No, I'm saying, who told you that he would go to his secret lair to help her? Who told you that?
I was told that by a close friend of his. A close friend of the family's.
A close friend of his.
His.
Okay.
Yes.
Listen. Mm-hmm. Listen to more.
It didn't work. So we kept thinking, talking, and just researching different things. And finally, you know, we started researching. And we said, we're just going to have to do some sort of examination. Okay? Plead to death. Okay? That's how they used to do it way in the back, when they used to do sacrificial things.
You take a plea to death?
Bleed to death.
Oh, bleed to death, sorry. Okay.
That's okay. Okay. And so we started researching where would be the easiest to stab, to do, when not, so the kids could bleed to death, maybe in combination with the sleep drug.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
I know I tried. I don't know if I ever punctured it. I don't know if I did or not. I saw a little mark on her, but I don't know if I saw anything. But then she rolled and started scribbling, and I put my hand over her mouth, and I put a pillow over top of her, so she went, and then she started to fade away. And I just held that until there was no motion left.
No way in H-E-double-L. Here he is talking about his wife, that she's the mastermind behind annihilating the entire family. We were researching where we thought it would be the easiest to stab the children so they could bleed to death. The mother, I'm telling you, did not do that. Listen to more of Anthony Tote.
We walk in. He's on his back. She's just sitting there holding his feet together. We're just in there, just eyeing each other, just gaining the confidence, I guess, you know. And I go to, I stabbed him, and he started kicking. He was trying to get up, and he kept rolling, So I ended up putting a, there was a pillow there, and I put a pillow in the back of his head so he wouldn't hit me with the back of his head. And I reached around with my hand and held his nose in his mouth. And he kept rolling and kicking and rolling and kicking, and then it eventually stopped.
He is just brimming with love for his family, trying to think of just the right way to murder them, including his wife.
I couldn't help my wife pass. I felt a failure. I wasn't there the night my kids were died. I felt a failure. I decided that I wanted to be with my family, that I wanted to die, that I deserved to die. I loved my wife. I loved my kids. They were first and foremost in my life. I did not do this.
Yes, you did do it. You killed your entire family, but you couldn't kill yourself. Listen.
So then it came to me. Then Megan asked that I wait a day or two to make sure everybody passed, make sure the house was all set, and that kind of stuff. And so that's what I did. I started the Benadryl. I tried hanging myself, zip tie around the neck. The only thing that did was irritate my glottis. I couldn't get down the carotid artery because my neck is too big. I tried to set up hanging over the edge of the beds. Was trying to figure out how to go through and fall on the knife in the right direction to get it upward into my diaphragm.
Really? It irritated his neck when he tried to hang himself. Sydney Sumner, what about the purchase of a gun?
So there's a receipt that proves that Tote purchased a gun 5 days after his family was last seen at that Christmas concert. But it was just a pellet gun. And investigators determined that Tote did shoot himself with this gun twice, but it obviously wasn't fatal.
Okay, Sydney, he shot himself with a pellet gun. Okay, so somehow he managed to murder his entire family and the family dog, but he decided to kill himself with a pellet gun. And as you can see, he's still very much alive. Sherilyn Cadle, you know him. What light can you shed on his personality? What drove him to this?
He was just in over his head so much. And I think it meant of a very, this is a common thread that I'm finding with a lot of these family annihilators. They really care what people think of them. They want to, he was very well liked in Connecticut. He had the two physical therapy businesses. He was so well liked by his patients. They raved about him, actually, about how much they loved him, and they were so beyond shocked when they found out that he did this. And so I think he was just so in over his head. One of his loans was more than $100,000. He had accumulated $500,000 in debt just from taking out different loans, one loan to cover another loan and this loan to cover that loan. And I don't think Megan knew anything about these loans. I think he did this on his own. And then he got in over his head. His credit line dried up and he had nowhere to go. He started being dishonest with his Medicare billing, Medicare or Medicaid billing. He was billing them, and when services had not been rendered. So I think for Anthony, he just really cared an awful lot about what people thought of him, and just couldn't take it anymore and decided to kill his whole family. And at that point, maybe to get sympathy from people. I don't know. If you want to kill yourself, you can't do it any other way. Take the knife that you killed your family with and slit your own wrists. But he's so narcissistic, and a true narcissist, I don't believe, wants to ever harm themselves. I think it's all about protecting themselves.
And even now, suing from behind bars, citing the FBI regs and the U.S. Postmaster General regulations that once a letter is stamped and sealed, it's under the jurisdiction of the U.S. and cannot be opened by anyone other than its intended target. He's actually suing for $9.9 million, claiming his mail has been opened at the jail and leaked to the media. FYI, we're not reading your mail. Why do family annihilators do what they do? What drives them? Of course, the state never has to prove motive, but you can't help but wonder why when you think of this family gone forever. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.